Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Together with Jesus. We're glad that you joined us once again as we continue to read two chapters of the Gospels every week. Today we are reading Matthew 7 and 8, and we're reading it out of the New International Version, the NIV. Let's get started. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Let me take the speck out of your eye," when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under feet and turn and tear you to pieces. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. The one who seeks finds. And to the one who knocks, the door will be opened. Which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate, and narrow is the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit you will recognize them. Not everyone who says to me, "Lord, Lord," will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, "Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles?" Then I will tell them plainly, "I never knew you. Get away from me, you evildoers." Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on a rock. The rain came down, and the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, and the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. When Jesus had finished saying all these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority, and not as their teachers of the law. When Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." Immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. Then Jesus said to him, "See that you don't tell anyone, but go and show yourself to the priest and offer the gift Moses commanded as a testimony to them." When Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him asking for help. "Lord," he said, "my servant lies at home paralyzed, suffering terribly." Jesus said to him, "Shall I come and heal him?" The centurion replied, "Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof, but just say the word and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, 'Go,' and he goes, and that one, 'Come,' and he comes. I say to my servant, 'Do this,' and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed and said to those following him, "Truly I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the subjects of the kingdom will be thrown outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Then Jesus said to the centurion, "Go, let it be done for you as you believed it would." And his servant was healed at that moment. When Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and began to wait on him. When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits with a word and healed all the sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and bore our diseases. When Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Then a teacher of the law came to him and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus replied, "Foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But Jesus told him, "Follow me, and let the dead bury their own dead." Then he got into the boat, and his disciples followed him. Suddenly, a furious storm came up on the lake so that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Lord, save us. We're going to drown." He replied, "You have little faith. Why are you so afraid?" Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, "What kind of man is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." When he arrived at the other side in the region of the Gadarenes, two demon-possessed men coming from the tombs met him. They were so violent that no one could pass that way. "What do you want with us, Son of God?" they shouted. "Have you come to torture us before the appointed time?" Some distance from them, a large herd of pigs was feeding. The demons begged Jesus, "If you drive us out, send us into the herd of pigs." He said to them, "Go." So they came out and went into the pigs, and the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and died in the water. Those tending the pigs ran off, went into the town, and reported all this, including what had happened to the demon-possessed men. Then the whole town went out to meet Jesus, and when they saw him, they pleaded with him to leave their region. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the after party. This is the section where we talk about what we just read, and we're going to be talking today about Matthew 7 and 8. Thanks so much for joining us. One thing I do want to put out there once again is we've been doing this for about a month. We've been doing this for 4 weeks now, and we would love to hear some informal kind of feedback. If you're a member of University Lutheran, we should have some formal feedback coming up kind of soon, but if there's anything that you say, "Hey, I would love to hear this or not hear this when we're listening to the podcast," please do let me know that. Just feel free to reach out to pastor@universitylutheranchurch.org. All right, with that said, we are going to jump into the end of the Sermon on the Mount, and the way that this ends with the last third of the Sermon on the Mount is found in Matthew 7. We start off with Matthew 7, 1 through 6, and a lot of these are kind of things that seem like they're maybe like little aphorisms, sort of like when you're reading through the book of Proverbs and you're thinking, wow, how do these things kind of come together? There's all sorts of different scholars who think different things about how the Sermon on the Mount fits together and even how the Sermon on the Mount was composed. We mentioned last time, some people think that this was Matthew just kind of writing down the big important points out of a much longer sermon. Other people think that Matthew was actually including things in here that were kind of thematically that they fit. And so we don't really know is the way that comes down. We know that the Holy Spirit has given this to us for our enlightenment, so that we can know what Jesus was telling the people there, so that we can know what he's telling us today as his disciples. But sometimes these may seem a little bit disjointed as we get, especially here, to the end of the Sermon on the Mount. So Matthew 7, 1 through 6 is all about judgment, which is kind of interesting because Jesus tells people not to judge one another. And then at the end, he tells people not to throw their pearls before pigs and not to give what is holy to dogs, which involves some judgment. And so you maybe come away from that thinking, okay, well, how do I really understand judgment? And what's Jesus saying here? And one of the ways that people have understood this is that they understand that when Jesus says judge, that what he means is condemn or damn, even, don't send people to hell in your mind because, you know, they'll do the same thing to you, or, you know, that same measure is going to be measured against you. That's not really in the language. The Greek word here is krino, and it's a word that generally means judge or even categorize things. And so it's not really the necessity that Jesus is not saying here that we shouldn't damn people, which of course we shouldn't, because we can't, because that's really not our job. But he is saying here to be kind of watchful about how we judge people. And certainly there's a moment for that judgment that is okay, that the moment of judgment that is even necessary for us in our lives. And so as you get done with that, then after that, he connects up our desire to ask God for gifts. So he's talking to his disciples about how, you know, they know how to give good gifts to their children. And so likewise, you know, obviously God knows how to give good gifts to us. This sort of has the echo of the flavor of when he's talking about the lilies of the field. And of course, God knows the things that we need. He clothes the grass and the sparrows and all of that. And so, of course, he knows us. But he seems here to kind of connect that up with, of course, we know how to give good gifts to our children. God knows how to give good gifts to us, and that means that we then can treat other people as we want to be treated. So there seems to be kind of something extra that's tagged on here where we go, oh, okay, God takes care of me, and because I'm taken care of, then I understand how to take care of other people, and my neighbor is going to be one of those people. I'm going to want to take care of my neighbor as I take care of myself. After that, he talks about the difference between narrow and wide gates, and this seems to be just Jesus kind of bringing up the idea that there are different paths that people go on, and the path that is the narrow path is the one that his followers should take, and the narrow path here is one that not everybody takes, and because of that, you kind of wonder, okay, what is it that Jesus is setting us up for here? And what Jesus is setting us up for, it seems like in the rest of the sermon, is he's setting up that there's kind of this dichotomy. There's two different kinds of ways of going about things. One way is to listen to him and actually put what he says into action. The other way is to listen to just whatever makes us feel good. And that's the next part in Matthew 7, 15 through 23. Jesus then talks to his hearers about fruit and trees. And, you know, he says that you can tell a fruit, you can tell a tree by its fruit. And then you can also, additionally, you can kind of tell what kind of fruit it is. You know, bad fruit doesn't come from a good tree. And likewise, you know, if you're getting grapes off of something, it's because it's a grapevine. And so you can kind of understand a little bit of people from what they produce. Now, here, Jesus is not saying that you are saved by your works, but rather he's kind of pointing his hearers out that there are people that are understanding who God is in ways that aren't producing fruit. And they're putting things to work, but as they're putting those things to work, those things are not actually producing what they should. And so they're trying to go in and produce grapes, but what they're actually doing is they're producing thorns and thistles, because that's actually the framework that they're doing. It's sort of, they've got the wrong operating system here. And then after that, we get into Matthew 7, 24 through 29. Jesus talks here about rock versus sand. And this is where he really kind of brings the Sermon on the Mount to a close. And where he's bringing it to a close here is again, kind of showing us that there is a difference. There's two different things that we can think about, two different ways that we can go. One of those is going to be like building our house on a rock. The other one is going to be like building our house on sand. And Jesus was a builder. Oftentimes we think about Jesus's father, Joseph, being just a carpenter. That's one translation of this. But the word there is tecton. And a tecton was a little bit more than just a carpenter. He was a builder. It's likely that Joseph himself was even more of a sort of general contractor than he was just a carpenter. And so Jesus would have known not just how to work with wood, but he would have known how to build a house and where to build a house and how important a foundation is. And he's using some of that knowledge in order to bring this point across to the people that are there at the Sermon on the Mount. Well, after that, we get done with Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Matthew brings that to a close. And it's interesting, as he brings that to a close, he immediately throws us into a scene where Jesus is doing a lot of different healings. And the first two healings right away are healings of people that would have been considered outcasts. These would have been people that would have been considered as unclean. And so because of that, there's kind of this understood thing that what Matthew is trying to do is he's trying to show us, okay, as Jesus talks to all of the people there, he's living out what he's preaching in his life by going to the outcast, by going to the people that really need him. And so first he goes to a leper. It's notably on the Sabbath. He meets a leper as he's coming down from the mountain. The leper is completely unclean. The leper is not allowed to even approach a person who is clean because he has the skin disease, and yet he does approach Jesus. He kind of breaks the law on the Sabbath, coming to Jesus, and Jesus then does this thing that's kind of wild that I think we miss. Jesus goes and he touches the leper, and in touching him, he heals him. Now, what would have happened here is that anybody who would have touched a leper would have been considered unclean themselves. They would have had to go to the priest. They would have had to show that they do not have leprosy themselves and probably offer a sacrifice while they were doing that. Well, Jesus doesn't have to do that because as soon as the leper walks away, he notices that he's clean. And so Jesus can legitimately say, I didn't touch a leper. I touched a clean person because I made him clean. Well, right after that, we get into even more scandalous territory as a centurion comes up to Jesus. A Roman commander of 100 people comes up to Jesus, and he says, I have this servant, and the servant is paralyzed. He's not doing well. Could you please heal him? And Jesus, interestingly here, he offers basically to go to this centurion's home. Now, again, that kind of washes over us. We don't really think about that because we're used to going to whoever's house. But for Jesus to go into a centurion's house, a Gentile's house, it would have meant that he was unclean for a period of time as well. And he would have had to maybe go to the priest, or maybe would have had to do some kind of sacrifice in order to declare himself clean again. And it's almost like the centurion knows this and stops him from doing something that would cause him problems. And so the centurion says, no, that's okay. All you have to do is say the word. I get how orders work. I'm a officer. I know how this works. And Jesus marvels at this, which is really important. You have a Gentile here who is being marveled for his faith. And so Matthew, again, is writing to a Jewish audience, but writing to that Jewish audience, trying to convince them that the Gentiles can be Christians. The Gentiles are beloved by God as well. And so that's a little bit of what Matthew is trying to do by telling this story, is he's trying to show us that even the Gentiles are in the kingdom of God. And that's great news for us, because that means no matter who you are ethnically, that you can be a part of the kingdom of God as well. Well, after that, you get this interesting moment where everything has been sort of about Jesus's fame growing ever since right before the Sermon on the Mount. So Jesus's fame has been growing right after he's been baptized. He's been growing, you know, he's got a bigger congregation, if you will, than even John the Baptist, who brought all of Jerusalem out to hear him. Jesus has even Gentiles coming out to hear him from Syria and from other places. And so it seems like Jesus is building up. But then things kind of change, and some people offer to follow Jesus, and it's kind of like he rebuffs them. He says, well, if you really want to follow me, you just have to know I don't have any place to lay my head. And that seems to stop it for one guy. And there's another guy who comes up to him and says, hey, I'll follow you, but I have to bury my father first. And Jesus says, well, no, get that taken care of and maybe come back. And so there's all of these things that seem to sort of slow people down. It's kind of like they start to jump at the idea of following Jesus without understanding that there's going to be a cost associated with following Jesus as well. And so we can think about that ourselves. You know, we receive grace freely, But by being in the kingdom, by being a Christian, that there are things that are expected of us. And that grace continues to come to us freely. We continue to get forgiveness and all of that. But our existence in the kingdom is something that actually kind of requires faith. It requires us to go about living a life that is trusting in Jesus. And that's what happens with Jesus and his disciples when they get on the boat. So the disciples that do decide that they want to continue to follow Jesus, they get on this boat and it's stormy and it's going back and forth. And again, you've got Jesus. He's the son of the tecton. He's a landlubber. And so amazingly, he's asleep in the boat while everybody else is going crazy. They're afraid that they're going to sink and drown. And they wake him up, and Jesus almost is kind of grumpy when they wake him up and says, okay, be calm, and the sea is calm. And then he turns to them and he says, you know, why did you not have enough faith? Why is your faith so little? And again, there's this kind of sense of testing the faith of the disciples. It's easy to want to jump on to the Jesus bandwagon, but here they're finding out that following Jesus is not necessarily going to be all easy. And so right after that, we follow Jesus into a place that is Gentile territory. And we know that because there's a herd of pigs. And there's not a big market in Jerusalem for bacon because everybody in Jerusalem is kosher and they can't eat pigs. And so we know that if there's a herd of pigs, there's a bunch of people here that are Gentiles. And so there's two men who come out of the tombs. And this would have been kind of a normal picture of people that were demon-possessed in that day. Demon-possessed people, it seemed, wanted to hang around in tombs. In fact, there are even writings from the rabbis that's one of the things in the checklist, that they say, okay, do you think this person is demon-possessed? Well, thing one, are they hurting themselves? Check. Thing two, are they living in or around a graveyard? Check. And so as they're going through that checklist, these guys kind of fit the checklist. And so the men come up to him and they're speaking in the demon. Like the demon is using the body in order to speak to Jesus, and they're wondering why Jesus is here. And as they begin to recognize who Jesus is, they try to strike a deal with Jesus. They say, hey, can you put us in the pigs? Now, why that is, we don't really know. I've looked a bunch of different places. There's no real satisfying answer as to why these demons think it's a good idea to jump into the pigs, especially after when you know that afterwards the pigs go and they commit suicide. And so we don't know why that happens, but we know that that's a part of the story. And as that happens, when the townspeople come out after Jesus does this, they tell Jesus to get out of town. Now, that's probably because they've just lost a herd of pigs. It's maybe also because they're really freaked out about who this Jesus is. He's able to, you know, cure people that have demon possessions and control pigs, maybe. And so they're just kind of marveling at who Jesus is. And that's where we end up with Matthew 8, where at the end of Matthew 8, you now have Jesus in a completely different place than when he was in Matthew 7. Matthew 7, he's distinctly in the territory of Judah, of Galilee. It's a mixed bag. There are people there that are Gentiles and Jews. But here at the end, you have, these are definitely mostly Gentiles, but everybody's still doing the same thing. Everybody is still marveling at Jesus and at the authority that he has. That's what they say right at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. They marvel that Jesus is able to speak to them with authority, not as one of the teachers of the law. So the teachers of the law, the scribes, they would have normally just spoken in these sort of citations. They would have said, well, you know, Rabbi Shammai says this, or Rabbi Hillel says this other thing. And instead of doing that, Jesus just says, this is what I think. And he can do that because he's the Son of God. And that's great news for us that we're listening to the Son of God tell us what life is all about and how we can follow him, even when he tells us that that's not always going to be easy. He does let us know that it's always going to be good. So thank you so much for being along with us on this journey. We pray that you'll have a great week, and maybe you'll be able to even listen to Matthew 7 and 8 again, or somehow do something else, and maybe read it on your own, or read it in a different translation. Whatever you do, God's blessings, and we'll see you next week.